stole my money last time and never even got that abortion. I should press charges against you for theft." He shook his head in exasperation as if he were talking to a naughty child. "You're just lucky my wife's out of the house today." The fear inside my belly caught fire and rose, white hot, until it rested on my tongue, pulsed in my neck. I walked to his desk and perched on the edge. I could tell it startled him, but he worked hard to cover it. "So you did know Olivia," I said.
"Yeah, I met her.
In an extremely bizarre twist of fate, your daughter met my daughter and somehow they became pals. It wasn't hard to put the pieces together after that."
"Were you sending Olivia death threats?"
He barked a short laugh. "Do you hear yourself? I'm a grown man, Abby, a politician, not some jealous stalker or jilted lover."
"Did you push Olivia off that bridge, Gavin?"
"Don't be ridiculous," he snapped, his heavy brow folding into a V over his nose. "Why would I do something like that? Especially right before an election."
"To get rid of her, obviously.
You wouldn't want your wife or your voters to know about your illegitimate daughter."
He threw his hands up in the air.
"Look, not that you'll believe me or anything, but I didn't hurt her. She seemed like a nice girl. I was sorry to hear about what happened."
I pushed myself off the desk and slowly edged closer to him. "I want to know what happened to my daughter, and I think you know.
Don't forget, Gavin, I know you. I know what you're capable of, what you'll do for your own gain."
I leaned in, the intensity of my glare nuclear as I fixed it on his forest green eyes, so much like Olivia's.
"I don't think you..."
He was calculating his next move, how to win this situation. But I had the upper hand now. An intoxicating rush of power swept over me. How delicious it felt to turn the tables on him. The shy, insecure Abby he used to know was gone. I wasn't powerless like I used to be.
"You've made it so the detectives are doing fuck all about her case," I hissed. "What I don't know is why. I think you pushed her, afraid she'd tell everybody you're her father. And now you've gotten Anthony in trouble for helping me look into it. Do you know what that makes you look like, Gavin?"
I bent down so we were nose to nose.
"Guilty."
I straightened up and pulled the letter Kendall had given me out of my purse, smoothed it against my chest, and held it out to him.
"Shall I tell you what it says?" I asked.
"It's from Seattle DNA Testing Services." I tapped my finger against my chin and quoted, "Based on the DNA analysis, the alleged father, that's you, Gavin, cannot be excluded as the biological father of the child Olivia Knight, because they share the same genetic markers. Probability percentage, 99.9942%. Gavin snatched the paper out of my hand and tore it into pieces, his jaw set, the cleft in his chin more prominent than ever. I laughed, a hard, dry sound. "I have copies upon copies of this document, including one in a safe deposit box. So if anything happens to me, all this information gets sent to the media. Oh, and speaking of the media, you'd better find a way to get Anthony out of trouble with the Seattle police chief, or I'll make sure they get a copy of this." He stared at me, jaw hinging open. "Are you blackmailing me?"
"Hell yeah," I said.
A muscle ticked in his jaw.
"You don't want to do this, Abby."
"Oh, but you're wrong.
I do want to do this."
Gavin lifted hollow eyes to mine. The skin on his cheeks looked pale under his tan, and I could see a vein in his temple pulsing.
"I hear she's getting excellent care," he said quietly. "They've flown in a specialist to make sure she and the baby have the very best medical attention. It would be a shame to lose all of that."
My stomach turned oily, and I gasped.
"What are you... How do you...
Who do you think," he leaned forward, "is paying for her care?" "The anonymous donor. I closed my eyes, feeling as if my brain were liquefying. But what? I couldn't let anybody know she was mine, but that doesn't mean I hurt her. In fact, I was going to set up a trust fund for her, but then I saw what had happened in the news. I wanted to do something to help. You told me not to get in the way. You said you would kill us. Come on, Abby. I was young, just breaking into politics. I didn't want you ruining my career. Not then, and not now. I can't have anybody find out she's my daughter. But I'm not a monster. If you give that paper to the media, I won't pay for Olivia's care. I stared at him. For someone who saw herself as observant, detail-oriented, analytical, I'd been awfully stupid. I was such a fool. I'd thought I could beat him. But once again, he had me. Check and mate. I had to do what was right for Olivia and the baby, and I couldn't provide it on my own. The agony of knowing that I would never learn the truth about what had happened to Olivia was like a kick to the stomach. I had to get away. I turned and moved to leave, unable to speak. Gavin's face flashed a look of smug triumph. He'd won, and he knew it. The loss was awful, a disorientating, panicky feeling sweeping over me in harsh waves. Gavin stopped me when my hand touched the doorknob. Did you never stop to ask yourself why somebody from the Seattle Police Department would be working on a case in Portage Point? I turned around slowly. What? Anthony Bryant. Why is he helping you? It isn't in his jurisdiction.
My sister. She asked him to help me. As a favor, I stammered. He's being nice.
Don't be stupid, Abby, he said, his mouth twisting in incredulity. Nobody's nice for no reason.
The sky had changed while I was inside. Dark clouds were heavy with rain, and wind sent flurries of damp leaves scuttling along the ground in angry little whirls. I shut Gavin's front door and dialed Sarah's number as I walked toward my car. Sarah, I said when she answered. When you called Anthony and asked him to help me, did he ever say anything about jurisdiction, or were you just asking him to help me as a personal favor?
Wait, hold on, I can't hear you, Sarah said. The sound of children's laughter came through the phone.
A second later, it went quiet.
Sorry, she said, sounding breathless. I'm about to talk to someone about getting Dylan tested for dyslexia. What's up with Anthony?
I started to repeat my question, but she cut me off.
Wait, Abby, I never called Anthony.
I froze, stunned. Rain started falling then, droplets soaking into my hair, so cold they stung my head. I thought back to our conversation in the hospital. I know people at the Seattle Police Department through work. I'll call around. She'd never actually told me she'd called anybody. I'd just assumed it.
But why? Why would he help me then?
My voice trembled.
I don't know, Abby. I honestly don't. To be honest, I thought it was a bit of a coincidence he was assigned to you and I'd worked with him before. But it's Seattle. It isn't like it's a massive city. The police department and the psychologists work really closely. It wouldn't be unheard of for that to happen.
He wasn't assigned to me. He told me that from the beginning. He said, I thought about the first time we spoke. His initial confusion when I said Sarah's name. We'd quickly segued into the missing information on the police report, so I hadn't pressed him for clarification. I pounded my hand against my forehead. I'd been blinded by my desire to know what had happened to Olivia, who was responsible. I'd only heard what I wanted to hear.
I thought he said he would help as a favor to you.
No, I never talked to him at all. Sarah sounded worried. Why are you asking this? Is everything okay? I squeezed my eyes shut.
I don't know, I said. But if you didn't ask him to help me, who did?
Chapter 36. Olivia. September. I jumped off the school bus and glared angrily at the mustard yellow rear, black exhaust belching from it as it chugged away. I'd gotten my license more than a month ago, but I still didn't have a car. I was the only 17-year-old in my class who had to take the bus. It was mortifying. Sometimes it seemed like I'd get one step closer to a sliver of independence, only to have it swiped away from me. I was sure Mom had planned it that way. "Sure you can get your license," she'd said, when really she was secretly scrubbing her hands together in glee. She'd let me win a tiny battle, knowing she'd won the larger war. I kicked a clot of dirt, then turned up the driveway to my house. The air was cool and cloudy, a warning that fall was on the way. I sighed as I unlocked the door, letting myself into the quiet house. It wasn't not having a car that was upsetting me. The small rectangular box buried at the bottom of my book bag felt like it had been burning a hole there for the past 3 days. I threw my bag on the couch and rifled through the mess of loose papers and books. I had to stop putting it off. In the bathroom, I pulled the little white stick out of the box and read the directions. They were brief and simple. Even an idiot could understand them. Remove the test stick from its individual foil wrapper and take off the cap. Test directly in your urine stream, holding for 5 seconds only. Read your results after 3 minutes. I held my breath and pushed the stick between my legs. After I'd peed, I sat it on the back of the toilet and stared at it. How was it possible for time to slow down, like sap oozing from a tree? Every one of my senses was on full alert. I could hear the neighbor's dog barking across the street. I tasted salt on my upper lip. And my hands, when I looked down at them, felt like they weren't my own. The air in the bathroom was too hot to breathe. I crossed to the window and struggled with its rusty lock. It finally opened with a raspy groan, and clear, cool air swept inside. I swallowed ragged gulps, trying to still my thudding heart. When I turned around, it was there on the stick, clear as day. It didn't even take 3 minutes. I shut my eyes, gripped my hands against the counter. The back of my throat filled with dread, coppery, dry, scratchy as sand. When I opened my eyes, it was still there. Two cheerful, bright pink lines. I was pregnant. Amazingly enough, my body continued to function. I could breathe, I could talk, I could mow the lawn and do my homework. But I couldn't think. I couldn't plan for the future. I felt frozen. I avoided Derek, avoided Madison and Tyler and the rest of my friends. Words dribbled out of me, mechanical and hollow. I kept my head down at school and ducked away at the end of each day. Going to Madison's play last week had turned out to be a tense, nauseating test of my own acting skills. Derek darted concerned looks at me all night. It was a job trying to avoid him. At least Madison hadn't noticed anything. She was too enthralled with herself to even realize when I turned down the invitation to have dinner with her family. I dropped out of swimming, which I'd done every fall since junior high. I quit my volunteering job at the old folks' home before I even started. I used homework as a shield so I wouldn't have to have an actual conversation with my mom. True to her promise, she'd stopped checking my homework and just let me get on with it. She didn't even make me show her my test grades, which was good because I wasn't doing very well. The problem was, all that studying got me nowhere. I couldn't focus to save my life. There was no point, anyway. I'd be lucky to go to a community college now. Unless I got an abortion. But that wasn't an option. If my mom had gotten an abortion, I wouldn't even be alive. So I couldn't do that to this baby. Still, I couldn't go to school pregnant. It would be totally mortifying. I'd have to drop out. I wanted to slap myself. How could this have happened to me? We'd been so careful. I thought about that ad they show in health class. It only takes one sperm. I was that stupid teenage girl who got pregnant in high school. Just like my mom. Bile rose in my mouth, and I rushed to the bathroom, slamming the toilet lid open just in time to vomit forcefully into the porcelain. I puked again and again, my stomach aching, tears streaming down my face. Afterward, I went to my room and sat on the edge of my bed. I picked up my framed picture of Mom and me. In the picture, we were sitting next to a wide, meandering river, ripe summer grass blurring in the camera's eye as it waved in a gentle wind. We were facing each other, our foreheads pressed together, joyful smiles cracking our faces open wide. Looking at the picture, you couldn't see our eyes, but you knew we were happy. Our blonde hair, mine pale like straw, hers gold like honey, whipped against our sunburned cheeks. Our cheeks were stretched wide with laughter. We were laughing because we knew each other, and we were alive, and because there was so much to look forward to. She was my mom, and I was her daughter, and there was nothing more important than that. I swallowed a rising bubble of tears. Now we were just familiar-looking strangers. I hated the distance that had grown between us. I hated that it was my fault. I'd lied about so many things. And now I missed her. I couldn't tell her I was pregnant. She'd worked so hard to make sure I had a better life than she did, and now I'd ruined it all. My phone rang, and I staggered down the stairs to where I'd left it on the kitchen counter. "Hi, Mom," I answered. My voice sounded a bit shaky, even in my ears. "Hi, sweetie," she said. "Everything okay?" "Yeah, I just got busy on a calculus problem." "Okay, just wanted to make sure." "I'm fine," I interrupted. Mom didn't say anything, and I cringed, guilt sliding into my stomach. "Liv?" She hesitated. "Sweetie, is there anything you want to talk about?" "I'm fine. I just have so many classes and tons of homework. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just a bit stressed, okay? And I really need to get back to my homework." A long, awkward silence filled the line between us. And then a knock at the door made me jump. "Honestly, I'm fine." I wiped at tears that had started to cluster in the corners of my eyes. "Should we get you into some different classes?" She sounded worried. "Maybe it's all a bit too much." The knock came again. "No, it's okay. Look, I've got to go. Calculus." "Olivia, you don't have to be perfect, all right? Sometimes good is good enough. You know that, right?" I appreciated her saying it, whether she believed it or not. "I know. Whenever, whatever, I'm here forever. Remember that, okay?" She hadn't said those words in so long. My eyes grew hot with tears, and I suddenly wished to be small so I could crawl into her lap and let her make everything better. "Okay. Thanks, Mom." When I opened the door, Derek was huddled on the porch. He wore cut-off jeans and black tennis shoes and a blue windbreaker that flapped against his chest in the brisk breeze. I'd never seen him in anything other than his black t-shirt and jeans and his leather jacket.
"You've been avoiding me,"
he said. "No, I..." I tried to deny it, but couldn't. I glanced vaguely toward the pile of homework on the dining room table, but couldn't bother coming up with empty lies. I was too freaking tired. I moved out of the way so he could come inside.
"Are you breaking up with me?"
he asked once I'd shut the door.
"Please tell me the truth."
"What? No, I'm not.
Olivia, stop."
A spark of anger flashed in his eyes, the deep blue darkening.
"Why can't you just be honest? If you're still in love with Tyler, just tell me and get it over with."
"Derek!" I laughed out loud at how wrong he was. "I swear to you, I am not in love with Tyler. It isn't that." I pressed my fingers into my eyes, trying to hold back tears, but they came anyway, splattering hot against my icy hands. He put his hands on my shoulders and turned me to face him.
"What's wrong, Olivia?"
he pleaded.
"Tell me."
I tried to speak, but the truth stuck in my throat. My teeth were like bars that kept the words imprisoned in my mouth. Derek took my hands in his. He understood that the more upset I was, the less I could talk about it.
"It's okay,"
he said.
"Don't talk. Let's go for a walk on the beach. Does that sound okay?"
I nodded and dashed at my eyes, pulled in a ragged breath. We drove to Laurelwood and strolled along the boardwalk past the farmer's market. Derek impulsively bought me a flame-colored scarf from a portly elderly man bent at the hip like a question mark. He wrapped the slip of silk around my neck and kissed me on the nose. It wasn't my usual style, the flamboyant red, but maybe that's what I needed. "Thank you for this." I fingered the material at my throat. It was so silky, cool against my tear-warmed cheeks. We walked across the wet sand without saying a word, the red scarf caressing my throat like a promise. It was low tide, the sea lapping gently at the sand in the distance. The air was cool and damp, the way it gets when the clouds are full of water but it hasn't rained yet. Lethargic sunshine peeped shyly through racing clouds.
"I've been doing a lot of thinking,"
Derek began. "No, Derek," I interrupted. "I should talk first." He shook his head.
"Please, I need to tell you something."
He stopped walking and turned to face me, taking both my hands in his.
"I love you. I love you so much. But you deserve more than a bum who hibernates in his parents' basement. I don't want to be that guy. So I've started looking at classes at the University of Washington, and I've decided to study architecture. My dad said he'd pay for it, so I'm going to register for winter quarter."
"Derek, that's amazing." I smiled for the first time in what felt like weeks. "I'm so happy for you."
"I'm just so relieved, you know? Finally something my parents and I can agree on. Maybe if I go to school and get a good job, they'll respect me. It feels good, you know?"
"Yeah, of course."
"I mean, I know it'll be a bit annoying because we'll live so far apart, but I'll come home on the weekends so we can still be close. And it won't be forever, just a year until you start college, too."
His eyes glowed earnestly. "I'm really happy for you," I said again. What else could I say? His parents' respect meant so much to him. It was what he'd always wanted. How could I tell him I was pregnant and ruin his chance at that? He'd want me to get an abortion. I knew that absolutely. The implications of that realization crashed onto me, and my smile sagged. I stared out at the expanse of sea, speckled with white froth. He cupped my face in his hand. It felt warm and scratchy against my skin. A wave crashed close to our feet, salt water spraying our legs.
Hey, look at me.
He pulled my face to his, leaned his forehead against mine.
Whatever it is, Liv, it'll be okay. We'll be okay.
I rested my cheek on his shoulder. The smooth material of his windbreaker rustled against my skin. Seagulls yelped and whirled above our heads. In the distance, a couple was walking towards us, hands clasped, leaning against each other as the sea sprayed at their feet. A mountain of emotions sat on my chest, making it difficult to breathe. He wound his arms around my shoulders, and I lifted my face, pressed my lips to his. I loved him so much. But I knew with a clarity I hadn't felt before that I loved our baby, too. I wouldn't sacrifice the baby to keep him. My mom had given up everything to have me, to give me the life I had. I would do the same for my baby. Suddenly, I was terrified, certain I'd lose him when the truth came out. I kissed him frantically, my lips frenzied with fear of the unknown. I wound my hands through his hair and pulled him closer to me, but it wasn't close enough. A familiar voice came from over Derek's shoulder, somebody calling my name. For a moment, a split in the clouds made it impossible to see who it was, the bright glare casting a glow about the face. But then there she was. Madison. Peter was with her, and they both looked horrified, their faces stamped with a parade of emotions. Madison's lovely face was hard, all sharp angles and rigid planes. Her eyes were colored with an intense, unmitigated fury, and her lips were drawn around her teeth in an animalistic sneer. Worse, her face was flamed with hurt, torn open by my colossal betrayal.
Chapter 37 Abby. November. The clouds burst open and released sheets of water as I ran the short distance from Gavin's front door to my car. My heart clattered against my ribcage as I unlocked the door and jammed the key in the ignition. I turned the heating up to high and pressed the palms of my hands against my aching temples. My hands shook as I massaged my skull. I thought about Gavin's smug face. Now that I was safe in my car, I felt a crushing sense of failure, a powerful regret at not standing up to him. An unpleasant tightness squeezed my chest. The old Abby would have run away, spent the rest of her life avoiding Anthony. But I didn't want to be that person anymore. I didn't want to run. I didn't want to merely exist. I wanted to truly live. My whole life I'd pushed people away because I thought I was better off on my own. But Anthony was different. He'd done more to help me than any other person besides my sister. He'd gotten under my skin and met me, the real me, and I couldn't imagine how or why he would betray me. There must be a reasonable explanation. My phone rang, and I answered it immediately. Abby, Detective Sampson here. Our tech team traced the addresses that those picture texts in Olivia's iCloud were sent from. Two were sent from the public computers at the Seattle Public Library, and a few more were sent from a proxy server, which we haven't finished tracking yet. But one was sent from 2652 Elliott Avenue, 39B, a Mr. Noah Harris. Do you or Olivia know him? My mind jammed on her words.
Noah Harris, was the donor who'd had dinner with Gavin and Kendall the night of Olivia's fall. Somehow this was all connected. The name's familiar, but I can't think where from. But I do know he's a donor to Gavin Montgomery's campaign.
Interesting, Sampson said slowly. I think I need to have a talk with Mr. Harris.
Let me come?
I jumped in.
Absolutely not, Sampson said vehemently. That would be against police policy. I'll call you after I've interviewed him.
But she'd already hung up. I threw my phone down on the passenger seat, frustrated. She'd said the address.
What was it?
Right, 39B Elliott Avenue.
If I hurried, I could beat her there.
I reversed and turned my car around, about to floor it down the gravel drive, when I saw Gavin coming out the front door. I braked hard enough to skid, the gravel spraying my car like machine gun fire. Gavin turned, startled. I stared at him in the rearview mirror. For a minute, it felt like time had fallen away, and I was a scared, pregnant teenager again. I'd made the wrong choice then. Not about the abortion. I'd made absolutely the right choice, keeping Olivia. But taking Gavin's money. I'd spent my life feeling like he had a claim ticket on us, afraid he'd come and collect on it. I wouldn't live the rest like that. I didn't know how I would pay for Olivia's medical costs, but I knew I could. I was older, stronger, better able to cope than when I got pregnant with Olivia. And now I needed to fight for the truth, not only for myself, but for Olivia's daughter. I pulled another copy of the DNA letter out of my purse and got out of my car. I crossed the distance between us swiftly, without breaking eye contact.
Keep your money.
I handed him the letter.
I will take care of my daughter, just like I always have. Me.
But you? You have until midday tomorrow to get the detectives back on Olivia's case.
I want answers, Gavin.
And believe me, I'll do anything to get them. I turned on my heel and tossed over my shoulder.
Otherwise, this letter is going right to the media, with a copy emailed to your wife.
I drove fast toward downtown Seattle. I exited I-5, past the Seattle Public Library and Westlake Center, and threading my way along First Avenue toward Belltown. I pulled up in front of a modern 30-floor apartment building fronted by a rock garden and jammed some coins into the parking meter. I climbed the steep steps and huddled in the doorway, the best spot to see any cars driving by. Before too long, Samson's unmarked police car pulled up and parked out front. I flung myself down the stairs, words already spilling out of me.
Detective, I need to be here.
Samson turned to me, eyes wide. She was dressed head to toe in black, with a police-issue jacket over the top. Her police badge was prominently displayed on a wide black belt at her waist, right next to her gun holster.
Let me talk to...
But my words trailed off as a familiar figure emerged from her car.
Anthony.
I froze just feet from the car.
Anthony? I said faintly. What are you doing here?
Anthony and Samson exchanged glances. They looked like guilty children.
What the fuck is going on?
I burst out. I turned to Anthony.
Who are you?
Abby. Anthony shoved a hand through his tousled hair.
I'm so sorry. I should have told you the truth sooner.
Oh, God. I put my hands to my hot cheeks and felt a physical pain spreading through my chest, as if my ribs were cracking open.
You work for Gavin.
What? No. He blew out a long breath.
I'm sorry. I tried to tell you that night you were at my house. I just...
Tell me now.
All right.
Last month, Detective Sampson called me, asking for a favor. She was working on a case, but was getting blocked every way she turned. She wasn't given the budget she needed. She found out her partner had left some significant details out of the investigating report, and then he lied about trying to find the victim's cell phone.
Every time she got a lead, she was buried under more cases. So the only time she could work on the original case was during her own time. When she talked to the police chief, she was told in no uncertain terms to leave the case alone, to bury it. She knew something was going on. "What does that have to do with you?" I asked, frustrated. "Detective Sampson called me and asked if I'd get in touch with you, talk to you, and find out if there was anything else you knew. She wanted to solve the case, but she was pretty sure somebody wanted it to play like an accident." "So you hired him to work for you?" I asked Sampson. She shook her ice-blonde head. "No, of course not. I just needed some help, and Anthony said he'd get in touch with you. Off the record. I was working extra shifts, secretly interviewing witnesses, calling in a favor in the IT team to trace the texts. Anthony helped me find out what you knew." I shook my head, confused, and said to Sampson, "So the chief pressured you not to investigate Olivia's case? But why?" "I'm sure there'll be an investigation. I spoke with the Seattle police chief about Anthony, and he now understands the scope of what's happened and has referred it for internal investigation. McNally will be put on administrative leave while they figure out whether he intentionally covered anything up." "I'm sorry," Anthony began. But I whirled on him, anger frothing up inside of me, and cut him off. "Was anything you told me the truth?" He looked like I'd slapped him. "All of it. Your sister? Was she really murdered? Or were you just making that up to get my sympathy?" "I would never make that up, Abby." His eyes had hardened, and I felt a moment of remorse. "You know me at least better than that. Everything I told you is the truth. The only thing I left out was who I was helping, and why. Detective Sampson closed my sister's case 4 years ago. I owe her a debt of gratitude that I'll never be able to fully repay. We stayed in touch after she moved to Portage Point, so when she asked for my help, I had no qualms about saying yes." He took a step closer to me, his eyes a bright winter green. "You have every right to be angry. I should have told you sooner. But when was the right time? You've had so much to handle. I didn't want to add to it. I know that it matters how the pieces fit together. And once I met you, I wanted to help. It wasn't just a favor anymore. I couldn't let another person go through what I went through." He put one hand on my cheek. I closed my eyes and leaned against him, the truth flashing like fire along every nerve and into my brain. The hot anger I'd felt just a moment ago mutated into something softer, understanding. I knew how it felt to want to do the right thing while hiding the truth. I'd done it to Olivia her whole life. "You can trust me," Anthony said. They were some of the last words my mom ever said to me before she killed herself. But Anthony wasn't the same as my mom, and I wasn't the same person I was before I met him. Trust, I'd learned, was the greatest gift you could give. The greatest gift to receive. The belief that a person wouldn't betray you required a strength and confidence I was only just finding. Trusting someone else, having a partner, meant I was living. My eyes snapped open and fastened on Anthony's. "I do trust you," I said. Rain splashed onto my forehead, and I turned to Detective Sampson. "Thank you for trying to help me. Let me speak to this guy, though, please. I deserve that much." She scanned my face, her mouth set in a hard line. I thought she'd say no, but after a minute she nodded briefly and said, "Come on, then. Let's get inside." At the entrance, Sampson lifted the intercom phone and pressed the button for 39B. A few seconds later, the door buzzed open, and we entered a modern lobby decorated in neutral marble and bright chrome. To the left was a gigantic wall of mirrors. To the right, a row of mailboxes with tiny silver nameplates. As we crossed to the elevators, my eyes fixed on a name typed in block letters at the top. Harris. And then everything froze, my body suspended between the seconds. I flashed back to one of the first high school football games I'd gone to with Olivia. Tyler had scored a touchdown, and his name came up on the digital billboard in bright white lights. Tyler Harris. Everything clicked into place. Olivia had said Tyler was living with his dad for the summer. Noah Harris was Tyler's dad. I remembered him now. I'd met him at that football game. Tyler's dad lived at this address. This was where one of the texts had come from. I felt as if I'd been blundering along in the dark for weeks, and now, only now, had a spotlight finally been cast on the truth, illuminating it in all its gory detail. Tyler must be the mystery boy who'd taken quite a shine to Kendall at Gavin's campaign dinner. Hardly surprising, given how much alike Olivia and Kendall looked. All roads led back to Tyler. My world spun, and time sped up, as if trying to catch up with itself. I gasped, suddenly dizzy, the floor tilting. Abby? Anthony lunged for me from the elevator, catching me just before I hit the ground. Tyler! It's Tyler Harris, I babbled. The words spilled out of me, and there was nothing I could do to stop them. I knew I recognized the name. Noah Harris is Tyler's father. Samson looked at the elevator. Let's go. Anthony kept his arm around me as the elevator whisked us to Noah Harris's penthouse apartment. The doors opened to reveal polished oak floors and gorgeous floor-to-ceiling windows. An open-plan living room was decorated with warm tones, accentuated by a standalone stone fireplace that separated it from an expensively adorned dining room. The crisp clip of men's dress shoes smacked against the hardwood floor. Anthony dropped his arm from my shoulders, and I turned to see Noah Harris approaching. The pointed nose and thick lips, the sandy blonde hair and hazel eyes, so like Tyler's. Noah's bulky frame was wrapped in a dark suit and tie as if he'd just arrived home from work. Abby Knight? A lopsided, questioning smile lit Noah's face. It's good to see you. How are you? Noah extended his hand to me, then to Samson and Anthony as I introduced them. Noah. I faced him. Detective Samson is investigating Olivia's fall and has a few questions, if you don't mind. Of course. I'm not sure how I can be of help, though. Do you know Gavin Montgomery? Samson asked, taking her notepad and pen from her coat pocket. Noah seemed startled. The politician? Yes, my company organized a campaign dinner to raise funds for him. I met him there. When was this? The first weekend in October, if I remember correctly. Where was your son the night of that campaign dinner? Tyler? He came with me. We need to speak with him, Samson said. Is he here? Noah ran a hand through his hair. Is Tyler in trouble? Do I need to call a lawyer? He was one of the last people to see Olivia before she fell, so we just need to ask him a few follow-up questions, Samson said. Okay, Noah said, looking troubled. Well, he's at his mother's in Portage Point.
Chapter 38. Olivia. October. I'm not usually a reckless person. What happened the day Derek and I slept together wasn't really about being reckless. It was about giving in to the moment, something I didn't do very often. Usually, I lived so much in the future. Go to a good college, get a job, be successful. My mom taught me that. Look to the future, and you won't stumble on the present. Stay in control. Never let go. I knew now why she was like that, and maybe it wasn't something you could unlearn, but I didn't want to be like that. with Derek that day, the day we first slept together. It was about the moment. It was about living life, not letting it live you. I gave up concentrating on my calculus homework and crossed the living room to stare out the sliding glass window. The yard needed mowing. A few dying brown maple leaves clung delicately to the tree. A handful of crunchy ones wheeled across the grass. An unexpected wind stirred the weeping willow at the back of the yard. Outside, the air was starting to have that fall feeling. The last couple weeks had been damp and soggy, but today was clear and breezy, a new crispness in the air, that sense of things ending and others beginning at the same time. I'd started to feel a little better lately. I was still sick some mornings, but not as often. And mentally, I was stronger, too. I hadn't told Derek about the baby, but I would tonight. I'd put it off for too long. He was just so excited for this architecture course and the chance to prove to his parents he could be a success. But I'd learned my lesson about telling the truth sooner rather than later with Madison. Since she'd caught Derek and me together at the beach, she'd made school pretty miserable for me. At lunch, everybody squeezed together so my usual spot disappeared. Last week, Dana called me a fat hoe bag as I walked past their table. Alicia stuck her foot out and I tripped over it, sending my milk carton crashing to the ground. The whole group had laughed, and I hurried past, my face hot with shame. It was like fourth grade all over again. Somehow, Madison had turned all our friends against me. But this time I knew it wouldn't last forever. Angry Madison could be, like, lethal. But once she found out she had a niece or nephew on the way, she'd get over it. I pressed the earbuds of my iPhone into my ears and turned up the volume on Bob Marley's "Everything's Gonna Be All Right." I grabbed the red scarf Derek got me and looped it around my neck, lifting my arms to the beat and singing along. I was going to keep the baby. At first, I'd worried Mom would be disappointed, but the more I thought about it, the more I realized she'd be totally awesome, just like Aunt Sarah had been when Mom got pregnant with me. Maybe I'd have to give up school for a while, but I could do it later. There was always later. I'd tell her after I told Derek, after the barbecue tonight. A soft touch on my shoulder startled me, and my eyes jumped open. "Mom, hi!" I pulled out my earbuds. "Sorry, I didn't hear you there." A wave of nausea rolled over me, all that spinning. I'd have to mark dancing off the list of things I could do for a while. I flopped onto my chair at the kitchen table and flipped open my history book. "Are you feeling okay?" She looked worried and pressed the back of her hand to my forehead. "I'm fine." I pulled away, my shoulders rigid. "Just studying." "I know it's Saturday, but I have to go into work for a bit." She paused as if expecting me to argue. Inwardly, I perked up. She never worked on weekends. To be honest, I was looking forward to the time by myself. I listened to her blathering on about me staying inside, locking the doors, not letting anyone in the house, not riding in my friends' cars. My throat tightened with the effort of containing my impatience. She was leaving me on my own, but she still felt she had to control me. It wasn't like it wasn't safe here. The most exciting thing that had ever happened in our neighborhood was when old Mr. Macy down the road died, but he was like 90. "Do you want me to stay?" she asked, a frown crumpling her forehead. "You know you come first."
"No!"
I tried not to sound too eager for her to go. I took a deep breath and started again. honestly, it's fine, Mom. I have to study for this calculus test anyway. I thought of the balls of crumpled homework assignments stuffed at the bottom of my book bag, all with red C's and D's splayed across the front. If Mom found out my grades were slipping, she'd go nuts. I reminded myself she only pushed me because she loved me and wanted what was best for me. I stood and plucked up the scarf. I'm going to take a shower, Mom. See you at the barbecue later. It wasn't until she'd left that I remembered I'd forgotten to say thanks or goodbye or I love you. Any of the things normal people say. My brain was all over the place lately. But maybe that was okay. Maybe recklessness and just a little bit of abandon were exactly what I needed. I tilted my chin left and right, looking at my new haircut in the mirror behind the cash register. I loved it. A totally new look for the totally new me. My scalp felt so light and free without all that hair to hide behind. My cheekbones were angular, my jaw sharp and defined. I looked older, confident and bold, not uncertain and timid like my mom. Of course, the low cut of my new peasant top didn't hurt either. My boobs were huge. I exited the hair salon and checked my phone. 5 o'clock. Time to head to Derek's. I strolled along the boardwalk, enjoying the fresh sea smell. The unexpected heat of the autumn day had warmed up the water, making it smell of salty, baked seaweed. Seagulls floated lazily in the sky, squawking and diving for food. I cut inland from the boardwalk to the long, meandering road that led to the Stokes' house. Everywhere I looked, the colors of the leaves were changing. Fiery orange and red, burnt sienna, burnished gold. It was beautiful. Peaceful. My ballet flats clicked against the pavement, interrupted every so often by a soft carpet of pine needles that turned my steps to whispers. My phone pinged with an incoming text. I thought it was from Derek, asking where I was, so when I saw the photoshopped bloody picture of me with my head cut off, it was all the more upsetting. "Fuck you" was scrawled where my head should have been. A few seconds later, another message came through. It was a picture of me walking toward the school's track. Was it the day I'd sneaked away to meet Derek so we could find Kendall? My face had been scribbled over in hard, angry lines, a red noose drawn around my neck. "Kill" was written in red at the bottom. Then a text, "Fuck you," and another, "Fuck you." Then a series of texts started pinging, "Die, die, die," over and over and over. A sob crawled up my throat, and I frantically started deleting every hateful text and image I'd gotten, not wanting to see any of them. "Stop!" I screamed. The air around me suddenly thick, poisoned with the energy of my fear. "Stop! Why are you doing this?" I whirled around, my heart banging into my ribcage. "Answer me, goddammit!" The evergreen branches swayed in the gentle breeze. A squirrel chattered in the trees. Everything was quiet, but suddenly I was seized by a sense of dread. My limbs started quivering like a skeleton's. I knew the cold nausea edging up my throat was more than pregnancy. It was fear. I launched myself across the bridge. My feet thudded hard against the wooden walkway as I ran up the hill to the Stokes' house. I paused at the end of the driveway next to the house-shaped mailbox, my hands shaking, sucking in deep, gasping breaths of oxygen. And then my phone rang, vibrating in the hand that clutched it. For a second, I was too scared to look. The phone rang and rang, my heart still wheeling around my chest. But then common sense washed over me. It might be my mom. But it wasn't.
Hi, Olivia.
I recognized Kendall's voice, and my heart sank. I liked her, but what Gavin had said about her being mentally unsteady made me a bit nervous. Plus, Derek had told me she'd followed Gavin and me to the diner. What a weirdo.
Hey, Kendall. It's been ages, she chirped. How have you been?
I walked up the curved pathway past trees strung with twinkling lights to the Stokes' beautiful Tudor-style house, pausing under the arching brick entrance and sitting on the stone steps. I resisted the urge to groan out loud. Talking on the phone with Kendall was the last thing I wanted to do right now. I was already on edge about those creepy pictures, plus I had to face Madison, and then I needed to tell Derek I was pregnant. I'm good. I glanced around to make sure nobody was listening. You? Three guys from my class walked toward me and exchanged glances, then waved awkwardly. I put my hand over the phone and smiled, then moved out of the way so they could go inside. I'd forgotten how many people came to this neighborhood barbecue every year.
Good, good. So, I got the results back from that DNA test you had sent to me?
I'd forgotten about that. It didn't matter now. I'd met Gavin and knew the truth, and a little piece of me wished I hadn't. Yeah? I replied, feigning interest. It had been nice of Kendall to let me have the results sent to her. I didn't want to hurt her feelings.
Yeah. The letter says Gavin's your biological father. Probability percentage is 99.9942, she laughed. I'd say that's pretty clear.
Yeah, no kidding. A car pulled up and parked across the street. A man and woman in matching khaki pants and white polo shirts got out and walked toward the house. They brushed past me as if I weren't even there.
I guess that means we're sisters, right?
She sounded delighted, but I knew the truth. It didn't matter at all. I wanted nothing to do with Gavin. My friendship with Kendall was just collateral damage. I laughed awkwardly. Yeah, I guess it does.
Are you going to talk to him?
Definitely, I lied. I didn't want to tell her I wouldn't. She seemed so pleased that we were sisters, like we'd end up hanging out and brushing each other's hair or something.
I'll call him and try to meet up with him for sure. Cool. Well, look, just be careful, all right? He can be dangerous, and when he doesn't get his way, he's like a spoiled toddler with a gun.
Of course, yeah. I looked toward the house. Upstairs, a curtain twitched. Madison was watching me.
I have to go now, I said. I'm at a friend's house. I'll talk to you later, okay?
And before she could protest, I hung up the phone. Chapter 39 Olivia October. I shoved my phone into the pocket of my brown leather jacket and rang the doorbell. Dr. Stokes threw open the door. She was dressed in a sleeveless, body-clinging red dress that showed off her cleavage. Who dressed like that for a barbecue? I glanced down at my leggings and loose-fitting peasant top, feeling underdressed.
Hello, Olivia, darling.
She air-kissed me on both cheeks like we were European royalty. She always did that, put on airs.
Maybe it was where Madison got her snobbiness.
My goodness, look at your hair.
I grinned and twirled like a ballerina. Do you like it? She tilted her head to the side and looked at me intently.
I do. It suits your bone structure.
I beamed, pleased. Thanks. I followed her into the house,
shrugging out of my jacket and hanging it on the coat rack by the door. Uniformed caterers and black and white clad waiters carried giant trays of food from the kitchen to a linen-draped table in the backyard. I peeked at one tray. Fat wedges of cheese on pale crackers, a crystal bowl filled with suspicious-looking black balls, fire engine red chilies stuffed with cream cheese, massive green olives bloated with garlic wedges, and the smell. It was divine. "Looks amazing, Dr. Stokes," I said. My stomach growled, and I crossed my hands over my middle and laughed, embarrassed. "Madison?" she called down the hall. I cringed, nerves fluttering in my stomach. Madison appeared like a wraith from the hallway a few seconds later.
"Oh, it's you."
Her inky eyes scraped across my face. I peeked at Dr. Stokes, wondering if she could sense the tension between us, but she'd already wandered away, flapping her hands and saying something to the caterers. She was like that, though, totally self-absorbed. Madison hitched one hip against the dining room table and leaned an arm on the chair while she looked at me.
"Your hair's short," she said.
I wasn't sure if it was a compliment or a criticism.
"Yeah?"
I touched the strawberry shortcake pink tips self-consciously.
"I wanted a change." "Well, you got it."
A flash of sadness broke across the tight anger etched into her face.
Oh, hey, babe.
Derek appeared from the kitchen and grinned at me. A lock of hair hung over his eye, and I wanted to brush it away, to feel the warm skin of his forehead. For a moment, everyone else, including Madison, simply disappeared.
"Wow, your hair looks amazing."
He fingered the tips of my hair.
"I really like the pink highlights. Very punk."
Madison shoved away from the table and glared at us.
"Found a crowbar big enough to get the knife out of my back yet?" she snarled acidly.
The comment was directed at both of us, but her eyes aimed at me. Derek stepped between us, catching the glare like a sword to his chest.
"For fuck's sake, Madison,"
he said, eyes glowing fiercely.
"Just shut up, would you? Olivia hasn't done anything wrong."
But I had. I'd betrayed my best friend, and I had to fix that. I reached past Derek for Madison's hand.
"Please don't be mad. I know..."
"Whatever." She cut me off scathingly.
"You've told so many lies, I don't want to hear them anymore. I hope you smother on them."
She huffed dramatically down the hallway. At the last second, she turned and smirked at us.
"Oh," she said, all faux innocence. "I invited Tyler here tonight. I figured it would be such a shame if he missed out this year. He's still my friend, after all."
And with that parting shot, she flipped her hair over her shoulder and stormed back toward the hallway.
"But she hates Tyler," I said to Derek,
hurt mingling with incredulity.
"Ignore her. She's just trying to upset you. Don't worry. She'll get over it."
He grabbed my hand and pulled me toward the back door.
"I'm starving. Let's go get some food, and then I want to show you something."
The backyard had been transformed. A canopy of lights arched over the deck. Candles in delicate crystal holders were dotted around white linen-draped tables. Next to a smoking barbecue was a sleek bar with a uniformed bartender already mixing colorful cocktails. Derek made a beeline for the bar, but I tugged on his hand.
"Derek, can we talk? I sort of need to tell you something."
"Okay, but can we eat first? I'm starving, and my dad said I could have a drink."
It was ages before we had another minute alone. I chatted to some kids from my school, and Derek had a few beers with his friends, so he disappeared for a while. Then my mom showed up and was predictably shocked about my hair. I could see her thoughts storming across her face, but she didn't say anything about it. She'd never tell me off in front of people. A little bit later, I got a text from her saying she'd gone home early, so I found Derek and tugged at his hand. "Derek, can we go somewhere and talk?" I murmured.
"Oh, yeah, sorry,"
he said. His eyes were glassy, and I could tell he was buzzed from the beer.
"Hey, I have something for you. I made it, and I think I want to give it to you now."
"Okay. Let's go to your room, yeah?" I said. We sneaked around the side of the house to Derek's bedroom door. The party was in full swing now that night had descended. Neighbors and friends around town streaming into the backyard, exclaiming over the beauty of the decor and debating whether it was warm enough to dive into the swimming pool. Uniformed waiters meandered through the thickening crowd with appetizers and tall, bubbling glasses of champagne. Derek pulled me inside and shut the door, the thrum of the crowd immediately turning to a low murmur. He pulled me into his arms and kissed me full on the lips, his mouth tasting of beer and barbecue sauce.
"Here."
He pulled a blanket off his bed, spreading it on the floor like a picnic blanket. "So, what do you want to show me?" I asked.
"Ah, so the lady is curious."
The beer had made Derek extra goofy, and I debated for a second whether I should wait until he was sober to tell him about the baby. "Very curious," I said, smiling.
"Okay, but look, it's just something. I mean, if you don't like it, that is, you don't have to like it."
"Derek, I'm sure I'll love it." I hid a smile. He was so cute when he got nervous. He nodded and disappeared down the dark hallway at the back of the room, emerging a moment later with a wooden 10x12 picture frame. He flipped the frame to face me.
"I said one day I'd draw you,"
he said quietly.
"I've been working on it the last few weeks."
"Derek," I gasped. The portrait was beautiful. He'd sketched me in black and white charcoal, the lines delicate yet flowing. My right hand was bent under my chin, my hair long, smoothed on either side of my face. My lips were dark, glistened with shadow, just a hint of a smile tugging at the corners. But it was my eyes he'd captured best. They were pensive, wide and luminous, peeking at him through long lashes. He'd somehow exposed a vulnerability I'd never seen in myself before. At first glance, I looked dreamy, wistful, an aura of fragility about me. But on second glance, I could tell it was more specific than that. Derek had drawn me in love.
"It was that day, you know, our first time together in bed, and you looked at me, and the look you gave me, I've never forgotten it."
I didn't say anything. I couldn't. I was so full of emotion. I reached for the frame, and Derek started to babble in the lengthening silence. I traced a finger across the portrait.
"You don't have to put it up or anything, you know, if you don't like it or whatever."
He reached one hand over his head and rubbed his neck, looking uncomfortable. I put my finger on his mouth and leaned in and kissed him. "It's beautiful." I looked again at the portrait. "It's seriously, absolutely beautiful." I glanced at the darkened hallway. "Is that what you do back there, then? Draw?"
"Yeah, it's sort of my art studio."
Derek shrugged, embarrassed. "I love it." I kissed him again. "And I love you. Thank you." His shoulders lowered and he exhaled.
"So, What did you want to tell me?
Oh. I shook my head, trying to change gear. Here, sit down. He leaned the frame against the foot of his bed and sat cross-legged in front of me. I don't know how to tell you.
There's nothing you can't tell me.
As if it were that easy. Okay. I exhaled through pursed lips, then inhaled deeply through my nose. I'm pregnant. I don't know how long we sat there like mirror image yogis. Derek had turned a disturbing shade of gray, not one syllable or drop of sound dribbling from him. Time ticked by at an excruciating pace. Finally, he spoke, his voice low and tight.
What are you? We? What are we going to do about it?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I have some money saved. We could...
I cut him off. I'm keeping the baby, Derek.
Olivia.
He shook his head, blotches of red rising to his cheeks.
Fuck.
He shook his head again and rubbed both hands over his eyes.
I'm starting college and... Fuck. My parents, I can't...
Irritation slid up my spine, mingling...